Pozcast. Thank you for having me, Joe.
Hi, welcome to the Pozcast. I am Joe Poznanski, and with me is Michael Shore. Michael, welcome.
Joe, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. There's so much to get into the Pozcast this week. I mean, I would call this our most jam-packed Pozcast ever. It's jam-packed. I mean,
except for the fact that there is never any basic reason to be doing this.
Nope.
Like, I know what you're going for, but it seems silly to say that there's so much to get to when really there's no reason that we're doing this at all.
No, if we didn't get to any of this stuff, it would do nothing. It would mean nothing.
That's right. There'd be no difference. There literally nothing would change in America.
Nothing at all. But we still have so much to get to.
Yes. Oh my God, I jam packed. We can't keep jabbering because there's so much to get to.
And we're gonna start with, of course, the Tommy Pham update.
Tommy Pham, fly ball into deep right. Cardinal back.
For those of you who listened last week, which of course is all of you, the official Pozcast player this year, taking Matt Caesar's cherished role, which is sad, right. Sad to drop Matt Caesar. But we love our Tommy Pham for a couple of reasons. But the main reason is we want to help Tommy Pham have a 300, 400, 500 season, 300 batting average, 400 on base percentage, 500 slugging percentage, Tommy Pham of the St. Louis Cardinals. Mike, where does he stand? Where are we with Tommy Pham?
We announced this last week that we were adopting him and we were rooting for him to have that magic 300, 400, 500 line. And very briefly, the next night, I think he homered in like his second at bat and was up for a second. He was above the Pham line. We're calling this the Pham line instead of the Mendoza line. The Mendoza line is a 200 batting average. The Pham line is 300, 400, 500. So
correct.
He was over that mark. Briefly, he has come back to earth a tiny bit heading into tonight's play.
Okay.
He's at 305,
so 397. Wow.
And then 497. So he's if he like doubled twice, I think he would probably get over both on base and slugging, or like singled twice, maybe even. Well, he probably needs a single three times. But like, he's very close.
Four. He probably needs a 2 for 4. To get over the on base, and then probably what, 3 or 4 total bases to get above the slugging. But
that's
he's so
right.
close. He's right on the Pham line.
He's right there. It's in his sights. It is achievable here on August 23rd. It's achievable for Tommy Pham. I will say, here's a couple and poking around. I've learned some Tommy Pham trivia
data. Sure, very interesting.
Some interesting little tidbits. First of all, this is by a factor of essentially 2, Tommy Pham's best year in the majors.
Yeah.
He's only first year, he was 26. The first year he came up, he had 6 at bats or something, or played in 6 games when he was 26. So he's really only been in the league for 3 years. This is by far the most games he's ever played already.
Right.
He's in 96 games. He had never played more than 78 in the previous 2 years. Last year, he was a 226, 324, 440 hitter. With essentially a league average OPS. So like this is a true, what you would call a breakout season for Tommy Pham. Yeah. Which is very exciting. I love that he's our guy, because I didn't quite realize how average he had been until now. I also didn't realize he was 29. He's playing for one contract right now. Like he's probably only ARB eligible for another 2 years. He's probably going to hit free agency when he's 31 or 32. This could be the thing that either makes him all of the money he'll ever need for the rest of his life, or he'll wash out of the league. So it's the stakes are high, Joe, is what I'm saying.
The stakes are very high.
Yeah. But also I learned about Tommy Pham. He's from Vegas. Did you know that?
Wow. I did not know that.
That's kind of interesting. He's born in Las Vegas. He was drafted by the Cardinals in the 16th round of the draft 11 years ago.
Wow.
He was drafted in 2006. So he was 18. He was drafted out of high school, I assume. And he's been in the minors for 8 years. He scraped and scratched and clawed his way up to the big leagues at age 27, basically. And now here he is on the verge of a 300, 400, 500 season. Very exciting.
And the podcast favorite player. I mean, that's obviously a big honor for Tommy Pham.
Huge.
I'll say two things about Tommy Pham. One is to just sort of reaffirm what you're saying. He has career 5.6 WAR. That's his career WAR. His WAR this year is 4.2, right? So he basically was he was nothing until this year. I mean, he really had not made any impact on the big leagues at all, and now he really is having a fantastic 4.2 WAR in 96 games. That's big.
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah, pretty sensational. Yeah. And the second thing is, and I did not follow up on this as much as I would have liked to, but several of our listeners, all of our listeners, let's be honest, it was like three of them, pointed out that Tommy Pham is an advanced stats guy, that he is like a guy who will occasionally retweet like a FanGraph story or something.
Oh, really?
The choice was a gut choice, right? You would have to say we chose Tommy Pham not after studying the depths of who Tommy Pham is. It was really more of a gut choice, and yet it's like a Malcolm Gladwell blink thing that we ended up with the perfect player.
I would say we spent probably a total between the two of us of 40 seconds thinking about Tommy Pham. Total before we decided to make him the official player of the podcast.
Yes.
Maybe 30 seconds.
I think he literally just came up, right? I mean, at some point you were like, hey, this guy's having a good year. And I'm like,
I was in the middle of our brand new segment.
Which we will do again.
Take a spin around the big, what was it called?
It's the mid-August.
That's right.
The check-in.
Major League Baseball midsummer August check-in. Our new very famous segments. And I was doing this. That's right. And that's how this all came up, obviously, is we were discussing players who were 300, 400, 500, and he's almost there. Oh, and so now, and then just then you blink, and now he's suddenly the official player of the podcast. Do you feel like we should be that should come with some kind of award? Like, should there be a t-shirt for him and Matt Caesar? Should there be a trophy? What should they get as being the official player of the podcast?
It's a really good question. It's a really, really good question. What do we get for doing this? they should get everything that we get at the least. I mean, that's a minimum. No, there should be an official podcast t-shirt
at least, right?
For the player, right? Of course, I'm sure we would be breaking like 7,000 laws to do that, right? Like you know, various MLB rules and regulations or whatever, but I still feel like we should do it anyway. I mean,
here's what I would love. I would love for a young enterprising podcast listener out there to mock up using some kind of graphics program that I don't understand what amounts to a Hall of Fame plaque, not an actual plaque, but like a graphic that looks like a plaque
of a Hall of Fame plaque.
Yeah, with like a 2016 inductee Matt Caesar, and then with some information about Matt Caesar underneath about like why he was chosen or whatever, and then for 2017, the 2017 podcast Hall of Fame adopted player class, whatever you want to call it, is Tommy Pham. And then you'd have, and then we can tweet them out, and then we'll have like a running thing where every year there's a player. By the way, we've been doing this for like 9 years, and this is the we've only got around to doing this last year. But that would be great if we could have like some kind of, you could put it on your blog or something. You know what I mean? Like we could have there'd be a graphic.
This is a done deal. Because first of all, we should always thank our most ingenious listeners. Because remember, like, I don't know, three or four podcasts ago, we talked about how Vlad Guerrero should be the new symbol for MLB, like, you know, the sort of. And then like three people sent us versions of that, like actual versions with the ball like over his head and him swinging up at the ball. They're awesome. So first of all, thank you for doing that. We should have done more with that. We did not because we just totally forgot about it. But which is really our best excuse for everything we do. Yes. If you are interested in doing this sort of thing, yes, we want Hall of Fame plaque type, like an actual what looks like a Hall of Fame plaque, but just a photo of it or a graphic, however you do it. And well, yeah, well, I'll put that up on the blog. We'll tweet it out. You'll become just as famous as we are.
if not more so.
If not more so. I love it. I love it. Okay, look, I'm going to do, because it's time to do the Volvo read. So I'm going to do the Volvo read really quick here.
Great.
After a long, dark winter, every Swede looks forward to Midsommar, and now Volvo is giving America a reason to look forward to it, too. Join us for our Midsommar sales event and get up to $4,500 off on select Volvo vehicles. Enjoy standard features like keyless entry, rear park assist camera, navigation system, and more. But hurry, summer doesn't last forever. Take advantage of this limited time offer today. Visit your local Volvo dealer for detail. Offer excludes all V90, XC90 Momentum, and XC90 Excellence. Standard features vary by model. See your dealer for details. All right, we are doing our mid-August, mid-August
MLB,
MLB
baseball check-in roundup.
Roundup, which last week, if you were listening, Michael quizzed me on just a few, I wouldn't call them crazy stats, but just like a few kind of interesting little baseball tidbits. So I did the research this week, which is, I spent 4 seconds doing it. So I have two basic questions for you, and those will feed off into other things. So here is the first question for you, and I need a number for you from you.
Okay.
Okay. How many baseball players in 2017? So we're dealing just this season. How many players have had at least a 20-game hitting streak?
Ooh.
Ah, fun, right?
I feel like anecdotally, I have heard a lot less about hitting streaks year than in past years. I feel like the other night, in fact, someone like Andrew Benintendi or someone had like got a hit, and it was like he's now got a 12 game hitting streak. And that made me think, boy, I haven't heard about any long hitting streaks, I feel.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say it's a small number. 20 games is a long hitting streak.
It's a pretty long hitting
streak. I'm going to say it's 3 people.
That's an excellent, excellent guess. And we'll lead into our answer, which is 0 people.
Oh.
0 players.
Look at that.
But 3 players have 19 game hitting streaks.
Currently?
No, none are current.
Oh, okay.
I'm looking at it. No, none are current. In fact, all of them ended in July. So, 3 players have done it. Of course, I'm going to ask you who those 3 players are. I'm going to give you a hint. I'm not going to just do it. 2 are great players, like truly great baseball players.
Okay.
And one is not at all a great baseball player.
All right.
So I can give you more, let's start with that.
I'm going to do very logical, obvious guesses here. I'm going to pick Jose Altuve, and I'll pick Joey Votto.
Well, Altuve, fantastic, because that is correct. Altuve had a 19-game hitting streak all in July. Basically, had a hit every day in July. Hit .524 for that 19. Game history.
He's the best. He's the best. I feel like, okay, can I say something quickly? I feel like the official baseball logo should be 2 people. It should be Vlad Guerrero and Jose Altuve.
Yes.
And they should be, it should be back to back. I know they're both right-handed, but somehow they should be back to back or something. And I think, how tall was Vlad? Vlad was a pretty big guy.
That's a pretty big guy. Were you 6'2", maybe? I mean, I could be wrong about that.
Well, anybody will look big next to Altuve. But those 2 guys are like the 2 kinds of hitters in the world, and they should both be celebrated.
They're both so wonderful. Just wonderful players. Vlad was 6'3", so not pretty close. Jose Altuve is good. It is not Joey Votto, but it is another great player in the National League.
Nolan Arenado.
That's a good guess. No, it's not Nolan Arenado.
All right, give me one more.
One more guess. Almost any guess, almost anything I say to you will give it away. Probably the face of baseball.
The face of baseball in the National League? Bryce Harper?
Bryce Harper, yeah.
Okay.
Bryce Harper also had a fantastic July. He did it also. They started almost the same. Harper started on the first and Altuve on the second. The third one, I'm going to just give you the team, and I'm going to tell you what position he plays. And then we'll
And I still won't get it?
No, I think you will get it, but I think most people would not.
All right.
Okay? He is a Kansas City Royal.
Okay.
Okay? And he plays – I mean, he's kind of played he moves around a lot. I guess he's the most – no, he did, because he's an outfielder and an infielder. He played mostly – he's a second baseman this year, but he's played like five or six positions.
Oh, they have a guy with an absurd name that I never remember. That every time I see him – oh, I'll get it. Whit Merrifield.
It is Whit, right? Merrifield. Yes, excellent.
Every time I see him, the only other Whit I know is the filmmaker Whit Stillman. And who is like this incredibly patrician kind of like Protestant guy who makes these really like rarefied movies about wasps, basically. And every time I see the movie, the name Whit Merrifield, I think like that's a combination of like Whit Stillman and an actor who was in a Whit Stillman movie. Like that's what Whit Merrifield sounds. It sounds like a character in like a George Bernard Shaw play, doesn't
it? Does.
It? Like,
it really
absurd.
Does.
I know nothing about Whit Merrifield. I don't know what he looks like. I don't know what ethnicity he is. I don't know anything about him except that he is named, has an absurd wasp name.
Well, here's the thing that I really like about Whit Merrifield. Whit Merrifield is from the South, is that? That shouldn't surprise you. I think Whit Merrifield sounds like a very Southern name. He played at South Carolina. But here's a fascinating little tidbit about Whit Merrifield. He went to Davie County High School, which is in Moxville, North Carolina. Moxville, M-O-C-K.
Sure.
That's not a real place. Like Whit Merrifield, I live in North Carolina. I've never heard of Moxville. I don't believe it.
I'm looking at this guy now. I believe I understand what's happening. I believe that he is a actor who was hired to play the role of a baseball player, and that he somehow accidentally made the team.
The team, and had a 19-game hitting streak in May. So excellent guessing on that. I'm now going to give you one more, and this is going to be, I think the thing that I think is cooler, even than hitting streaks, is longest on-base streak, okay?
Okay.
Which we know who the longest on-base streak is. We know who had it. I'll tell you what. Let's do it this way. Six players have had 30-game or more on-base streaks. Six players. How many of them do you think you could just sort of name?
Wait, six players in Major League Baseball history?
No, this year.
This year.
Yeah, 30-game. Yeah, and I would 30 say...
30-game on base. Well...
I'd say two of them are MVP candidates, and then the others, we'll just run through those.
All right, so six players. Well, Votto would be my first guess.
That's right.
Okay.
He has the longest.
There's
something
okay.
about that that's kind of interesting.
You gotta go. You just gotta do this purely on walks, like guys who walk a lot. That's the only way to do this, I think. So, I'll go Paul Goldschmidt.
Ooh, good guess. No, not Paul Goldschmidt. He's in the American League.
The next one is in the American League. Mike Trout.
Not Mike Trout. Well,
not Mike Trout.
No. One more guess. MVP candidate in the American League.
I'll say Altuve again.
Aaron Judge.
Oh man. See, this, you sneak attacked me here. This is a sneaky way to get me to either say the words Aaron Judge in a positive context or to surprise me with the fact that I didn't guess that it was Aaron Judge.
Exactly.
And,
right.
By the way, you saying MVP candidate a number of times, that is trolling. That's pure trolling.
It's pure trolling. You know it's true, though.
Yeah.
Here are the others, by the way. The thing that was interesting to me about Joey Votto is I knew Joey Votto. I'm like, he obviously was the guy. He had a 36-game on-base streak. He had it in April and early May. Like, I thought it would be, like, the most recent thing, right, where he almost broke Ted Williams' record for most consecutive games of getting on base twice, right? That was – he had almost set that streak recently, but this had nothing to do with it. This was back in April when nobody was even talking about Joey Votto. He had a 36-game on-base streak.
What do you mean in April? No one ever talks about Joey Votto ever. They don't talk about him in April. They don't talk about him in May or June or July or August. They don't. They'll never talk about Joey Votto until he leaves that team. I mean, it's absurd. Look what he's doing again. I know we talked about this last time, but his season, this might be his best season.
I think
it probably is, right? Like, he's already walked 103 times. He's already hit 32 home runs. His career high is 37. His on-base percentage, he's going to be, by the way, 300. He's going to at least be 300, 450, 550, and he may be 300, 450, 600, which there can't be that many of those people in history. He has a 168 OPS plus. His OPS is 68% better than the league average. He's ridiculous, and no one knows that he's there. No one knows that Joey Votto's alive, and he's in the middle. Yeah.
His career OPS plus is 158. I mean, the guy does this every single year.
Yes.
And nobody cares.
He is going to, when he retires, he is going to walk. He's going to be the first player ever inducted into the Hall of Fame after 1 year. After 1 year, they're going to be like, we don't need to bother anymore. We're just going to, of course, we'll just put Joey Votto in. And when it happens, a large number of people aren't going to recognize the name. They're going to assume that he was some kind of executive who, like, helped the Braves get their new stadium or something.
Who is this? What? Yeah. Who is this guy?
Yeah,
that is crazy. One thing. I mean, look, Joey Votto's going to the Hall of Fame. We've already talked about this. I am not looking forward to the, I never thought of him as a Hall of Famer. I'm not looking forward to that.
Yeah, that's bad. That's going to be bad. That's going to be so annoying. I'm pre-annoyed at how annoying the discussion is going to be around him.
Oh, it's going to be the worst. All right, let me tell you the six guys. Joey Votto had a 36-game on-base streak. Eduardo Nunez, who I would not have picked, had a 33-gamer. Aaron Judge had a 32-gamer. Zach Cozart with a 32-gamer. Marwin Gonzalez, who we talked a little bit about last week, having a fantastic year that nobody is noticing. 32-gamer. And then a guy who would have been a nominee for podcast favorite player, Tyler Flowers.
Big fan.
Spent like an hour just talking baseball with Tyler Flowers not that long ago. Love the guy. Love him. So, all right. So that's our, what is it? August, mid-August.
Midsummer baseball check-in stat roundup.
I love it. I just love it. All right. We are going to go on to some Twitter reader questions. I told you it's a jam-packed podcast. Before we do that, I think there's something very important that we need to discuss. And this is, I was going to talk to you a little bit about it off the air because it's very sensitive and I understand that. But I think our podcast listeners should be in on this conversation. When are you leaving the Patriots and just becoming a Browns fan? When is that happening?
So this is what I'm prepared to say today. Today, Wednesday, August 23rd, 2017. Okay. I've thought about this a lot. I've done a lot of soul searching. I cannot leave any of the teams that I root for. I just can't. Wow. It's not going to happen. It's impossible. I'm in it for life. Ride or die. That's just the deal with the Patriots, the Red Sox, the Celtics, and I don't know. I guess Michigan football will be the fourth. Those are my four teams. So I was born
Bruins,
in Ann Arbor.
Not the Bruins don't care about hockey.
I've never cared about hockey enough to have to feel like I have an emotional attachment toward the Bruins.
Sure.
So I wouldn't put them in the same category. However, I am prepared to announce today, Wednesday, August 23rd, 2017, that I will this year consider myself a Browns fan.
There we go.
I will follow the team. I'm going to root for the team. I will follow their insane transactions very closely. The problem is I don't have the football package because I gave it up out of protest to the league. So the Browns are never ever on national television.
No, never. Well, every so often they'll put them like on a Thursday night game where they will lose like by having a blocked field goal return for a touchdown, that kind of thing.
They have to play, the rules are they have to play one Thursday night game a year and all of those games are televised. And there will probably be at some point a day where they play either the Chargers or the Rams or the Raiders or some team out here that allows me to watch them. But when I can watch them, I will watch them, and I will root for them. I don't know how many. I think I could name. I was trying to think of how many Browns I could name, and yes. It's a very small number, especially because the few that I knew, most of them are gone. Like Terrell Pryor Jr. is gone, right?
He's gone.
Not on the team anymore. Yeah. And then they have Brock Osweiler, but now they're going to maybe trade Brock Osweiler.
Or get rid of him or dump him. Yeah.
Allow me, if you would, a solid week to do some Browns fandom research.
Sure.
I try to get to know the team, to look at their schedule, maybe circle some games, you know, that I think are winnable, get into the spirit of this, and then a week before kickoff, the last podcast we do before the first Sunday of the season, maybe we'll have a special Brown prediction segment where we make predictions based on the Browns and how we feel like they're going to do this year.
I think that's fair. Obviously you're going to read the weekly Browns diary. I mean, obviously.
Of course. I would actually love to contribute. Maybe there can be something called like Mike's Corner where.
Well, I've actually given you a corner of this before. Because we do tend to exchange texts during Browns games because who else are you going to tell that you're watching a Browns game? I love it. But in all, we have had this conversation before. You know, the Patriots are harder and harder to root for, aren't they? They are.
So hard. Yeah. So hard.
I mean, you have no choice. I mean, it's birthright, right? I mean, nothing you can do. But the news that they gave Donald Trump a ring could not have pleased you.
It wasn't the best I've ever felt as a Patriots fan. It wasn't like a top tier moment for me personally. Yes. The Patriots fandom has. It's at the very least I can say I'm somewhat inured to things like that now, right? It's not like that came out of nowhere. If you had asked me, I was talking to a friend of mine who's also a Patriots fan, and he made a very good point, which is if I asked you a week ago, do you think they gave Trump a Super Bowl ring? I would have said, yeah, of course they did. Sure. Of course they did. Yeah. So it was not amazing for me personally, but it also wasn't like it came out of left field or something, you know.
I think
it's funny though, without trying to drag the podcast too deep into the realm of social or political commentary, I will say it's continues to amaze me that Kaepernick doesn't have a job. Colin Kaepernick is still just waiting. A guy who's good enough to be a starting quarterback in football is still doesn't have a job, and people are like, well, you know, he spoke out in his beliefs, and that kind of probably hurt him. There was an article about it on ESPN today, and meanwhile, Tom Brady openly endorsed a candidate for president who was himself a very divisive figure. And when people questioned him, Brady was like, well, I'm not going to talk about it. And so I was like, well, would that have worked for Kaepernick? What if Kaepernick, they've been like, why did you sit for the anthem? And he just, well, I'm not going to talk about it. It's not football. I somehow feel like that wouldn't have worked in the way that it worked for Tom Brady. That's just
probably
a hunch.
Yeah, that's a pretty fair hunch that would not have worked. So.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I'm excited about this Browns thing. By the way, I'm also excited about this because I am about to close the open whatever file that has Whit Merrifield's baseball reference page on it.
Great.
And I just realized his nickname is Whit Bird.
What does that mean?
I don't know. And what? Whit Merrifield needs a nickname? I mean, his name is Whit Merrifield. That's it. Whitbird. They said, no, you know, Whit Merrifield's not Whitbird.
It's not Protestant enough. It's not WASPy enough. We need to add bird onto the end of it, like Lady Bird Johnson.
If it was Whitford Merrifield, that would be awesome. See, that would be great.
Yeah,
all right. All right, we are going to go on to our podcast reader questions. But first, watch how smoothly I did this. We want to take a moment to tell you about the Cut 4 cast. The Cut 4 cast. The Cut 4 cast is the podcast from the staff of MLB.com's Cut 4 section, which focuses on the lighter side of baseball. It'll make you laugh, and you might even learn something about baseball dogs or ballpark food. Last week's episode debated Giancarlo Stanton's status among baseball's best and dreamiest players, then presented a few hypothetical inventions which would forever change baseball if someone could just figure out how to make them real. To listen to the podcast, search Cut 4 Cast, that's Cut, C-U-T, number 4, C-A-S-T, in Apple Podcasts or wherever else you get your podcasts, and click subscribe. And now, on with the show.
Incredibly smooth.
It was smooth, right? It was smooth.
Silky smooth on that read,
It was really smooth. No, and now on with the show. I do think that this should be the new segment.
Yes, I think that and now on with the show, which is a line that's actually written down on this read for the Cut Forecast.
To be fair to our producer TJ, it is not written on this read.
I thought it was.
No, he took it out of this read. He put it in there like kind of as a joke at the end.
Okay.
But he didn't think I was really going to do it, but of course I am. I'm going to do it every time. So
no, now you have to do it. Now the only segue you should ever be allowed to make between any kind of sponsored content or ad copy and the show is by saying, here's what's going to happen. I'm not going to respond to you until I hear you say, and now on with the show.
And now on That's with the show.
That's like an activator that gets us to the point where we can talk again.
I think it's because it is the first time and now on with the show has been used since when?
Since like the Lucky Strike Milton Berle Family Comedy Hour in 1931.
31. Yeah, I would say that's it. I would like to do it in that voice, like that, and now on with the show, you know, that voice. I'd like to do that, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, we are going to go on with the show. It is time for we should have a name for our Twitter.
We do
questions. Whoa,
it's
we
called
do.
Checking in with the podcast Twitter readers with Mike and Joe.
We can't call everything checking in. We can't do that.
Why
for
not?
Every
That's what we're doing. Aren't we checking in with them?
We are checking in. Can't argue.
Can I
with
say
that.
Okay? So you put out on Twitter that you would like some questions for the thing. And I would like to read verbatim my favorite exchange from the questions that came in.
Okay.
So you wrote, podcast recording tonight. Tweet in your questions for Ken Tremendous and me because, as you know, only we can answer your questions. Nice little funny joke. Enjoy
yes.
that.
Okay.
At JP Porkchop wrote you and said, at Joe Posnanski, you picked San Francisco to be one of the NL wildcard teams during a past podcast. What do you have to say for yourself? And you responded, I wasn't right.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair.
No, it's wonderful because it, to me, was the essence of all sort of windbaggy sports journalism like predictions, right? That's there's no other answer. The answer is I was wrong. I made a prediction and it was wrong, which by the way is 95% of all predictions
95%.
Made in all sports.
Yes.
Yeah, so like the it's funny to respond to the kind of like, well, guess what? You said this, and then it turns out this other thing happened. What do you say about that? Well, yeah, that's right. I was wrong. I was.
I was wrong. That's it.
I wasn't right. Yeah, but I personally enjoyed the phrasing of it as I wasn't right instead of I was wrong. There's like, it's 12% funnier to say I wasn't right.
Yeah, I think that's true. All right, we got great questions this week. I
great.
Don't know if we do or not, but here we go.
You haven't even read any of them.
Chewbacca wants to know, by the way, thumbs up to you, Chewbacca. Thumbs up to you,
Chewbacca. Oh, Chewbacca.
Chewbacca wants to know, what cheap food is so much better than the expensive version? Which I think is a great Ooh. Question. So we're asking the questions, they're the same food. In what kind of food is the cheaper version of the food better than the expensive version of the food?
I'll tell you one, counterintuitively, I would say chocolate. I think Ooh. That like, I think your basic Hershey's chocolate bar tastes better than a super gourmet 72% cocoa bean purity, whatever BS that you get. Like, you know what I mean? Like sometimes if sometimes really high end chocolate tastes really good, but very often, if you get like a really nice box of holiday chocolates or something and I eat one, my thought is I'd rather be eating like a Mr. Good bar. You know?
Yeah, I could see that. Chocolate, that's a pretty good choice. The one I was thinking of is barbecue. It seems to me cheaper the barbecue. In fact, a friend of mine, well, you know him, Tommy Tomlinson, and I are of the biggest belief. This is one of our strongest sort of co-beliefs. If the window or whatever the sign doesn't have BBQ, like if it doesn't, if it spells it out, it no chance. BBQ, or else it has no chance of being any good. So I think barbecue is my choice for cheaper. But it's a great question. It's a great question.
I could see that. Yeah, I would also say that in certain circumstances, not all circumstances, but in certain circumstances, I would say the answer is like a cheeseburger. Like there is a $4
cheap burger. Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's like a $3 cheeseburger from In-N-Out or something.
Right.
Sometimes is going to be better than your like $18 highfalutin cheeseburger at a gourmet restaurant.
I'm totally with you on that. I think that's 100% right. I think you go into a nice restaurant and order the burger, you never think, oh, this is better than an In-N-Out burger ever.
Well, you might think like this is like it's got
it's
like
fancier.
It's got like an Asiago cheese crisp or something and some kind of like pickled sauteed onion or whatever, but like ultimately for what I'm now a vegetarian and have been for a long time, which is a huge bummer.
It's a bummer.
But in the old days when I would eat cheeseburgers, I usually found myself craving the cheapest possible cheeseburger.
I think that's a good choice. Absolutely. Yeah.
Good question, though. I like that question.
Really good question, Chewbacca. Okay, I've got like I'm gonna combine two questions here. One is from Ken Raining, who wants to know if we have any questions, any thoughts on I don't know if it's Rise or Reese Hoskins, the rookie for the Phillies. Any thoughts on his hot start? Is he our Aaron Judge? Okay, this is from a Phillies fan, and then the other question is from Mia, who wants to know, how many good place points does one receive for remaining loyal to the Phillies, asking for a friend? So basically what they're both the same question, essentially, which is, do the Phillies have any chance ever of being any good ever again? And I don't know the answer that is yes to that.
I don't think they're going to be good for a long time, right? Like, I'll confess right away, I don't know if you work for Major League Baseball, so you probably know more about this than I do, but I don't have any idea who this person's talking about. Who's Rise Hopkins? I've never heard this name before. Do you know?
I do know. Just he's a 20, I'm going to say 24, maybe 24, 25 year old rookie. It's RHYS. And he's got like 5 or 6 home runs in like the first couple of weeks in the big leagues. So that's all I know about him. He's probably not your Aaron Judge, pal.
Just so you know, literally as we are talking, Reese Hopkins has doubled to left.
Okay.
And knocked in Freddie Galvis and Nick Williams, and the Phillies are up 8-0 over the Marlins. So there you go. Reese Hopkins is 2-for-3 with 5 RBIs in this game.
You know what? He is your Aaron Judge.
You know what? He's better than Aaron Judge. You heard it here first. I'm saying it right now. 5 years from now, people are going to be calling Aaron Judge a poor man's Reese Hoskins.
I like that, because I think that once you knew his name, you pretty much knew everything you needed to know about the guy. That makes good sense. How many good place points does one get? Like, we know they get a lot for being Browns fans. Do you get a lot for being Philly, like sticking with the Phillies? Because Philly fans, you know, they have kind of a history of being kind of mean.
Okay, so in case anyone doesn't know what we're talking about here, the show that I work on called The Good Place, the idea is that like life is like a video game where everything you do gives you a certain number of positive or negative points, and people who end their lives with the highest scores get to get admission to what amounts to heaven, The Good Place, right? So, and there was a joke in the pilot last year that like remaining loyal to the Cleveland Browns got you like a pretty good chunk of points. It was, I can't remember, it was like 650 points or something.
It was awesome.
So, but the idea behind that was basically a joke for Joe. that was a tribute to Joe Posnanski. But the idea behind that was very much about the idea of remaining loyal. I believe it. Remaining loyal. I was very proud of my son recently because you know, the Clippers have had some tough times recently. They lost Chris Paul, and there's a lot of front office intrigue, and, you know, it maybe seems like Doc isn't the best GM. And meanwhile, every other team in the West is getting better as they're getting worse. And by the way, every team, now the teams in the East, the strong teams in the East are also shuffling the pieces, and they seem to be getting stronger. So my son was talking about next year and getting excited for basketball season, and he announced that he is remaining loyal to the Clippers.
Oh, yeah.
And the idea for him was, I don't care if it doesn't matter to me that, like, he basically, it was the first moment where he had gotten annoyed with bandwagon jumpers, because he's annoyed that everybody's a Warriors fan. And he was saying, I think it's going to be cool if I stay a Clippers fan. If someday the Clippers win the championship, it's going to be really cool that I rooted for them this whole time, instead of just like becoming like a fan of the Warriors, and that everybody is a fan of the Warriors. And I was like, I'm so proud of you. You're truly making me happy right now. And this is all a long way of saying that I think that remaining loyal to any team, especially in the team's darkest hours, should get you many thousands of good place points. And I think it's a good thing. Everyone should do it.
I do agree with that. I do agree. I think, and the Phillies, I mean, it's going to be a little while. It's going to be a little while, I think. All right, Fry's Dog wants to know, will Mookie Betts ever win an MVP award? Which I think is a great launching off point to discuss. What the heck is going on with Mookie Betts? What is happening?
It's really a problem. It's a problem in my life. And this is how good a life I have. One of the biggest problems in my life is that Mookie Betts is underperforming. Now, all told, he's still like top 10 in war in the league, because he plays such good defense, and he plays a huge right field at Fenway and plays it incredibly well. And he's an excellent base runner. And when he steals bases, he never gets caught. So he's still having like a very, very good year. But and the basic things that by which you measure hitters at a glance, his batting average, his home runs, his slugging percentage, his on base percentage, he's down significantly from last year. Now, it might just be a sophomore slump. The league might have figured out how to pitch to him. He could be hiding an injury. Who knows? But he took a large step back. His OPS is 100 points or more below what it was last year. That happens to be true of a number of players on the Red Sox team. I tweeted this out the other day, I think. Every single player in the Red Sox starting lineup has a lower OPS plus than he did last year, which is that's very unlikely that would happen. Now, in some cases, it's like Andrew Benintendi's OPS plus is 7 points lower than it was last year. And by the end of the year, it might be the same or it might be higher, whatever. But a number of them are down significantly. Xander Bogaerts, who got hit on the hand and hasn't been the same since. He's way down. Mookie Betts is way down. Jackie Bradley Jr. is way down. He's now hurt again. Like essentially everybody on the team is significantly worse, 20 to 25% worse than they were last year, which is really weird. Anyway, as far as Mookie Betts winning an MVP, if he's healthy, he should be in the conversation basically every year that he ever plays for the rest of his life, because he's so good.
Right.
He also happens, though, to play in a league where, besides Mike Trout, who's probably going to win the MVP again this year, and if he isn't, he should, or he would have if he hadn't gotten hurt, he's also got all of these guys, these Altuves and these Correas and these, how many young players are in the Francisco Lindor, these guys who are really young as Mookie Betts or younger, and as good or better. So, you know, the MVP is silly, and it should go away, but it won't. But I think the better question is, instead of will he win, because winning is a little fluky, I think the question is, like, will he be an MVP caliber player? And I think my hope and my assumption is that this year is the fluke, and that long term, every year of his career, he will be an MVP caliber player.
Yeah, I agree. I think he will. And I think I'll go on the limb and say I think he'll win an MVP. I think he'll win one.
Hey.
But I mean, the reason I say that is he's such a good all-around player that your point is right. I mean, he's kind of a league average hitter this year, and yet he's still an incredibly valuable player because he runs the bases, because he plays an incredible outfield and all those other things. So those things are – he's going to do that for a while longer, where he's going to be, you know, adding – whatever, two wins a year with all of these other things. And I think the bat's going to come back. I think the league adjusted to him, and it's been a weird year in Boston, like you say. And I think this will end up being a fluky year. But you know, if he has a similar offensive year next year, then, we'll reevaluate. I might not be right about that. And I would say I wasn't right if that happens. So.
Now, before we move on, are you aware of what is happening in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania right now?
I am not aware of what's happening in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania right now.
Okay. I'm going to risk screwing with baseball tradition. And because it's superstition, to tell you, because it's fascinating, and because as we continue to answer these questions, we're going to be able to watch this play out in real time. We are in the top of the ninth inning in Pittsburgh in a game between the Dodgers and the Pirates. At this point, through eight innings, Rich Hill is throwing a perfect game. Eight innings, no base runners, 10 strikeouts. However, it's nothing. So if the Dodgers don't score, Chris Taylor just singled. If the Dodgers don't score in this inning, and Rich Hill retires, he's thrown 87 pitches. So if he retires the three Pirates in order in the bottom of the ninth, we might have a Harvey Haddix situation on our hands.
Wow.
We might have a Pedro Martinez 10-inning situation on our hands, which is so – of all of the things that can happen, it's one of the rarest things that's ever happened that a pitcher gets to take a no-hitter or a perfect game into extra innings.
Yeah, it's well.
It's very exciting.
It's really exciting. It's Rich Hill, who is
and it's Rich Hill. Yeah,
yeah. He's had this incredibly weird season, and eight innings pitched, nothing's across the board, 10 strikeouts. Wow, that's.
So the Corey Seager just grounded out. So we are now going to the bottom of the. By the way, the funny thing is, by the time this is up. And people are listening to it.
They'll know.
Everyone will know. So there's no actual
drama here.
We're going to
make it sound dramatic, and they're going to be like, "We've already." That's like.
Yeah, we know. This was 2 days ago. We know everything that happened. Shut up.
Shut up and move on to the questions, please. All right. Very serious question from Jonathan. Literally, that's what it says. Very serious question. If all relief pitchers were pitted against each other in a Hunger Games scenario. Who would win?
Ooh.
Good question. Relief pitchers, because there's some monsters of that relief pitcher group. Because, my first thought would be Andrew Miller, but I don't think that's true, actually. I don't think Andrew Miller, he's tall, but I don't think that Andrew Miller would stand up against some of the other incredibly monstrous people.
Like, my first instinct was Kenley Jansen, who's an enormous human being. I think for Hunger Games, though, you might not want just size. You might want, kind of intensity, right?
Well, do they get the arrows and stuff? Do they get to shoot? Do they get to be like Katniss and actually, fire, actual weapons at each other?
I'm going to guess that the spirit of this question is more like it's not the actual bow and arrow competition. Right. I believe the spirit of the question is basically – every relief pitcher is like out in the wilderness needing to survive.
Right.
Like who's like the most kind of intense, like insane sort of like the answer to this is, however 15 years ago might've been like Billy Wagner, or Mike Timlin, who used to wear like red contact lenses because he was such a weird maniac. The answer for all pitchers, I would say, if you don't do relief pitchers, I would put my money on Max Scherzer. Did you see the video where someone they had an extreme close up of him when he was he was getting ready to pitch and he was like muttering profane insults about the hitter to himself. Like that guy's an animal. He seems like a perfectly nice guy when he's interviewed, but in the heat of competition, in the heat of battle, he is a monster. So if it were all pitchers, I would say it's Scherzer, but relief pitchers, the perfect game's over.
That could have ended more quickly right there. Jordy Mercer.
It's an error. No, Logan Forsythe made an error. Oh, that's kind of, he's never going to live it down. If this ends up being a 10-inning no-hitter, Logan Forsythe is going to never, ever, ever be able to get to forgive himself. Oh, poor what guy. A bummer.
Poor Logan yeah. Forsyth. All right, here we go. Next question. This is from Jordan. Is the Little League World Series overexposed? As a T-ball coach in Sioux Falls, I'm both excited at the possibility, yet nervous. As commissioner of your son's Pony League team, is the Little League World Series overexposed?
I have to say, I don't know how to judge whether it's overexposed. I have to say that I find it a little, it makes me a little nervous.
Yeah.
It makes me, like, it feels a little bit, I think it's, like, cool and cute that these kids get to be on TV yes. and that their highlights are on SportsCenter. And the other night in the Junior League, which I think is one level up from Little League, that kid made an unbelievable diving, tumbling catch over the center field fence. And it's like one of the best catches I've ever seen at any level. And I think it's cool. But also, like, these are 12 and 13-year-old kids. And, you know, baseball's a tough game, man. And there are losses, and it's embarrassing. And sometimes the other day I woke up to that story. I could my cat woke me up really early in the morning, and I went downstairs and I was watching, like, looking at ESPN, and they had that incredible video of the Dominican Venezuela game. Did you see that video where I believe the Dominican team had a pitcher who had pitched great all tournament, and then in the last inning he gave up like a two-run triple with like two outs, and the Venezuelan team won, and this kid just collapsed on the mound and was just sobbing, and the Venezuelan coaches came over and, like, picked him up and hugged him, and then some of the Venezuelan players went over and they hugged him, and there were all these incredible quotes from these kids who were like, look, we're all Latinos and we're all they're our brothers, and it was great, and we, you know, he pitched great all tournament. And then I read this other part of the story, which was that a lot of the Dominican team's parents couldn't make it to the game, so the Mexican team parents kind of adopted the Dominican team, and they all bought, like, a bunch of Dominican clothes and flags and stuff, and they showed up. And I, like, it's, you know, 6:12 in the morning, and I'm sitting in my office just weeping.
Right,
just
right.
Like, tears just pouring down my face at this whole thing. So, like, there are these stories come out of that tournament that are so wonderful, but at the same time, like, they're kids, man. They're really fragile, you know, little kids, and it does make me a little bit nervous sometimes when it's like, you're gonna be on SportsCenter and you're gonna be on MLB Tonight and whatever. That aspect of it does make me a little bit nervous, just because, like, just because they're so young.
No, I feel the same way. I feel, well, there are two things I feel about it. One is I feel that. I want them all to succeed. I mean, I don't want to watch a 12-year-old kid make the error that costs, you know, the guy the perfect game. I mean, it's Logan Forsyth, fine, but I don't want to watch a 12-year-old kid do that. And so I'm very edgy watching it. Like, I like watching, like, highlights, because, like, they're not going to show that on highlights. But, like, when you're watching it live, I'm very edgy. All right, Ian Coleman wants to know, very good question, I think, Ian. What kind of noodle wins the MVP for pasta? I think it's a good question.
Ooh, MVP is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. It's because he's not asking what's the best pasta. He's saying what's the MVP.
A noodle popped into my head, and I don't know why, but I did have a gut reaction.
Okay.
My gut reaction was penne.
Why was penne?
Okay, first of all, there is a problem with a lot of types of noodles, which is they're hard to eat. And penne is, in my experience, the easiest noodle to eat. It is the most efficiently picked up with a fork kind of noodle, because you can slide one of the tines
right
into
the
middle,
yeah,
into the thing, right?
Yeah.
Or you can, but also the fact that they're hollow makes it easier to pierce them, I think. And I find that a lot of the best dishes I eat, a lot of the best pasta dishes I eat are penne based. So I feel like MVP, one instinct is to say spaghetti, right? That's
right.
Like the most,
which is my instinct.
Yeah. Like that. I get that, but I think that in a weird way, the answer isn't the most common. Spaghetti is like the most common.
Yes, sure.
To me, but I think the one that, like, provides the most value might be penne.
Well,
I was 100%. I just want you to know, I was 100% sincere when I was trying to tease that out. Like, that was completely and utterly sincere that I was really trying to figure that out. And then the second I was done with it, I immediately was like, what am I talking about? This is nonsense.
Well, of course it is. I like a good penne pasta. I can't argue. There's really almost no pasta I don't like, really. But I got to think spaghetti, because spaghetti is the one, for you talking about MVP, spaghetti's the one that's there for you on a daily basis. Really, you can put anything over spaghetti and make a meal out of it. It's just, it's every day. It's there every day. I think sometimes when it comes to sports, we look really hard for an answer when Mike Trout's there for you all along.
I don't think spaghetti is Mike Trout. I think what you're talking about is, you're talking about the 2017 Dodgers, and what I'm saying is, on the 2017 Dodgers, spaghetti is like Chase Utley. It's like a solid performer that everybody likes it, and it plays every day, and it comes through in big situations, and it's steady, and you know it's going to play good defense, and it's going to be like a good, like solid hitter. And I'm saying Penne is Justin Turner. Penne is like, you don't think of it right away, but then you look at, or Anthony Rendon. Penne on the Nationals is Anthony Rendon. You look at Penne and you're like, well, yeah, I know that Penne is good, but then you really dig in and you really study the facts and you see that, oh my God, Anthony Rendon, Justin Turner, Penne, these things all have this like way, this deep wellspring of quality.
I think spaghetti is Bryce Harper. I just think spaghetti is just, it's,
I think that's crazy.
It's the all you can.
How is it possible though? Like, spaghetti's, it's common. That's the thing. It's everywhere.
Great. Well, it's everywhere because it's the most valuable pasta. It's not harder to make any other pasta. I mean, if penne was as great as you say it is, it would become spaghetti. It would be the thing that's everywhere.
I don't think that commonness is in any way a measure of how like the quality of something. Like,
I think it makes it the most valuable pasta, the MVP.
All right. We're going to the 10th inning. The no hitter is still intact.
Still intact. And he's gonna pitch the 10th.
Yeah, he's only thrown 95 pitches, so he's got to be coming out there again. Now they need Curtis Granderson's leading off. They need a dramatic home run to make this a 10-inning no-hitter. That would be so exciting.
It would be exciting. And right now, readers or listeners are going, I know what happened.
Yeah, we know.
We know. We know what happened. Stop talking about it. Jeff Harris wants to know, why do we still have to press Control-Alt-Delete to log on to a Windows machine? Jeff, what Windows machine are you using? When do you have to hit Control Alt Delete to log on? What is this? You have one from like 1991, Jeff?
I've almost never used a Windows machine, so I barely even know what he's talking about. Wow. I will say that the key strokes on even on iOS are hard to remember sometimes. Like, it's hard to remember how to force quit something on a Mac. I can't remember whether it's Shift Control option,
I just go up to the menu. Yeah, I've given up on even trying to guess that. Yeah. All right, Veronica Bars wants to know, what is the best length of sock for daily use? Veronica, fine question. Fine question, Veronica. The best length for sock for daily use is 3 inches over the ankle. That is, that 2 to 3 inches over the ankle is the best length. Michael?
That's insane what you're saying. I mean, I'm sorry to first take you here, but that's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Really?
No, I don't care. I think most of my socks are just above the ankle. I'd say an inch above the ankle.
Okay, well, we're in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
My wife.
But do you pull your socks up or do
no,
you,
no, no,
do you
no,
bunch
no.
them down?
I scrunch them down. I scrunch them down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be an inch. I don't know, an inch or two above the ankle. My wife insists the correct length for socks, you don't even see them. They don't even come out of the shoe, which you'll see.
My wife has a similar. My wife's preference for men, at least for me, in summertime when you're wearing shorts, is that preference. Is that she bought me a bunch of those little, like, basically slipper sock things that barely cover your foot there, or below the ankle, just over the heel, you know. I was very skeptical, but they're pretty comfortable.
All right.
Like, I kind of like them. Yeah, it's like you're not wearing a sock, except that you your foot doesn't get all sweaty and gross like it would if you weren't actually wearing a sock.
I could see it. I don't have that strong a feeling about it.
You don't? But it's such a vital issue facing our nation.
Veronica says yes. We have three more. We'll do three
all
more.
Right.
One is just a basic answer. Kevin L. Asked the question, who created the One Last Meaningless Thing theme song? I love it and want to look them up. Kevin, I'm a little worried that you know, I don't know. Is Kevin a record producer? What do you think? Or a stalker?
I mean,
I don't know.
I assume record producer. I assume famous record producer.
Famous record producer. So I will tell you, it's Jesse Barber is the inventor, creator, songwriter, did everything. She did the whole thing. Super talented Jesse Barber, doing our One Last Meaningless Thing song. Dan Grenier wants us to, I think America finally deserves a definitive ranking of the days of the week. If you can get on that, we'd appreciate it. Thank you. Definitive ranking of days of the week. Go ahead.
Wow. There's a very clear answer to what the worst day of the week is. It's incredibly clear. I will hear no argument that contradicts this. Do you know what I'm talking about? What do you say is the worst day of the week?
There's
an absolute right answer.
I have a worst day of the week that probably is not your worst day of the week.
Oh my God. There's a right answer to that question though. That's what I'm saying. There is no other answer.
Well,
the worst day of the week is Tuesday,
yeah,
straight
I
up.
I totally agree with you.
Oh good. Okay, good. Yeah. Yes, there's nothing good about Tuesday. Tuesday's not special.
Horrible.
Nothing is starting. Nothing's over. There's nothing good about Tuesday.
Tuesday's
it's absolutely,
horrible.
Unquestionably the worst day of the week.
It is.
So we
it
know
is.
That. Okay, so that's the worst. I
so
would say second worst.
Seventh. Yeah.
Second worst is probably Monday. Yeah. Probably, right?
I'm not a big Wednesday guy either. I got to be honest with you.
Here's the thing. I have an enjoyment of Wednesdays for a very specific and goofy reason, which is that in West Hartford, Connecticut, where I grew up in the public school system, Wednesday was the early dismissal day. So we got out instead
okay.
of getting out at
we
whatever, 3:10,
wow.
Wednesday we got out at like 1:15 or whatever. And so Wednesday was like this fun thing that happened at the end of every Wednesday that we got to like get early dismissal. So I've always kind of liked Wednesdays for that reason. That's obviously not a universal thing, but I was, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm okay with Monday as your second worst.
Then I would say Wednesdays.
Then
I think you probably go in order almost. You'd go, so I would go in ascending order. I would go Tuesday's the worst, then Monday, then Wednesday, then probably Thursday, then Friday, and then either Saturday or Sunday, and then the other one is the best, probably.
Yeah, I think that's right. The question to me, the only real question in that group is Friday good enough to overtake either Saturday or Sunday? Because Friday is a good day.
Friday's a good day, but you're still working.
You are working.
And if you go out on Friday night, you're tired because you were working all day, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't think it beats. I think the fact is, don't think about how your Friday ended. Think about how your Friday began, and it began with you having to wake up and go to work. That's the difference between
true.
Friday and Saturday
that's
and Sunday.
True. The second half of Friday way better than the first half. I think Saturday is your number one day of the week. Sundays are the problem with Sundays have always been post 7 p.m. on Sundays. Which is just like it's practically Monday already. I mean, you're just it's there, it's in front of you. I remember when I was a kid, just being horrified every time I would hear that 60 minutes ticking sound.
Oh yeah, that means your school starting
that's
basically
school
like
starting, right. So that's and yeah. that happens on Sunday. So I mean, Sunday's still a great day. It's still the second best day of the week, but I think Saturday might be the best day of the week.
My wife calls it the Sunday night blues. She gets the same feeling whether or not she's, you know, going to work, going to school, like her whole life. It's been like Sunday night blues.
Yeah, Sunday night
I
blues.
Get it. I will say though, the thing about Sunday is, and this again, it's, you know, your mileage may vary, but over the last 20 years on Sunday night, you're talking about The Sopranos,
yeah,
you're talking
true.
About Game
that's
of
true.
Thrones, you're talking about like some of the very, very greatest TV shows happen once a week and they happen on Sunday nights.
That's a great point.
Which is better than Saturday. Saturday doesn't offer you anything except the chance to go see an opening weekend movie in a really crowded theater, which is not ideal. So for that reason, I think I make Sunday the best day because I love the Sunday paper. Like there's a lot of,
you like the Sunday
and paper. It is always a little bittersweet because it's the week is starting, but I think Sunday has more to offer you qua a day than Saturday does.
All right. Well, it's close. I think we're pretty much kind of surprisingly on the same page. All right, we have time for two more very, very quick questions. One is Matt Stock wants to know, and the first half of this question we don't even need to answer. What is Michael's favorite piece of Joe's writing? You don't have to answer that. But the second part of the question is, and what is Joe's favorite acting performance of Michael's? I am going to answer that question.
Before we answer the question, Josh Harrison just ended the no-hitter, the shutout, and the game with one swing of the bat.
And every single person is just going, yeah, we know. Every person.
On Rich Hill's 99th pitch in the 10th inning, he gave up a solo home run to Josh Harrison.
Wow.
And the game is over, the no-hitter is over, the shutout is over, God, and he gets an L. The guy gets an L.
That's very Harvey Hatch, like very hard.
It really is. Yeah, his game score went from 104 to 93 in one swing of the bat.
Yeah, just dropped right there. My favorite performance of yours, without question. I take it back. There are two. There is the Saturday Night Live performance where you were dragged out of the building by your hair.
Sure.
By which wrestler was that? I don't even remember.
Triple H.
Sure. Yeah. But my favorite is definitely in the office as Moe's running alongside of the car. When the car was, I thought that the fact that that did not win an Emmy is to me devastating.
Sure, I was robbed. I was robbed.
You were robbed. All right.
I can answer the other half though. My favorite piece of your writing, I believe, is at a time when. A couple of years ago when a way for sort of somewhat ignorant sports writers who wanted to criticize what they consider to be sort of nerdy, advanced metric type baseball fans, they would always say the same thing about those people, which was that some variation on I'm out here watching baseball and living, breathing the game, and you guys are in your mom's basement. It's like the worst cliche is like your mom's basement. You live in your mom's basement. And you wrote an entry on your blog that was about your mom's basement. And the basic point of it, as I remember it, was my mom's basement was great. It was wonderful. I read comic books and I looked at baseball cards and there was a TV and we had a pool table, whatever the details were of your actual mother's basement. And it was a really lovely piece of writing. And I remember thinking that is so much better a way to counter the mom's basement type people than the way I've done it traditionally, which is to just yell at them and curse at them. And to say all sorts of unrepeatable, awful things about how stupid they were. So to this day, I believe that's my favorite piece of writing that I've ever read of yours.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. Our last question is from Danny. Danny wants to know, and I think this is how we have to end this because this is the greatest question. Who will finish second in the NL MVP voting behind Tommy Pham? And I think it's a great
question.
Who is going to finish?
Great question.
Who is going to finish second behind Tommy Pham?
I mean, you have to assume. Well, let's see.
Is he going to come back enough to do this? Is he going to? Is he going to have enough? It's the same question with him and Trout. Is he going to have enough at bats? Enough whatever to be there in the MVP voting?
He probably deserves it, but there's this other weird thing where a lot of weird teams are going to make the playoffs.
Yes.
That have guys on them who ordinarily would not be getting consideration for the MVP because their teams wouldn't make the playoffs.
Right.
Those teams specifically are the Diamondbacks and the Rockies.
The Rockies, exactly.
Charlie Blackmon get some consideration. Charlie Blackman's having the craziest year. He's going to score 150 runs this year.
He has 115 runs already this year.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's absurd. And by the way, Paul Goldschmidt, who is the Joey Votto of Arizona, in that every year he puts up these ridiculous numbers and no one knows he exists. Joey Votto's having arguably a better year than Bryce Harper.
It's insane.
And he, last year he had an off year. Paul Goldschmidt did, and he had a 900 OPS.
I was going to say, he had a great year, yeah.
Yeah, he had 110 walks. He walks 110 times a year. He's already walked 81 times this year. He is probably going to end the year with the best OPS of his career. And if his team, which they will, I believe, makes the playoffs.
I think they will.
I kind of feel like you might be looking at your MVP runner-up to Tommy Pham in Paul Goldschmidt.
I think you're right. I think he is the leader in the clubhouse for all those reasons. I mean, look, he's a great player, and you know, he's finished second in the MVP voting before. He puts up an MVP year basically every year. But now he has that little storyline narrative to go along with it. So, I think he's your Pham runner-up. I think that's fair. I think
now here's the crazy wild card. This will not happen. But in the right now, as we stand here, the Miami Marlins are 5.5 games out of the wild card race,
which is not impossible.
Not impossible. There are two teams in front of them. The Cardinals and the Brewers are both in front of them. But if Miami somehow gets super hot and makes the and gets a wild card berth, then the answer is Giancarlo Stanton.
That's right. Well, I mean, because you have to assume if they do make it, he will have a fantastic September. I mean, that's
right.
You know, and that'll be close to 60 home runs, right? I mean, that's, he has what, 46
he's
now?
46 right
now.
He's
got 4 weeks, you know, 5 weeks left in the season, 6 weeks almost. You know, that's 55 to 60 home run type of potential.
He's got 35 or 40 games left. And so you're looking at, he's going to score 120 runs. Yeah. He's going to hit close to 60 homers. He's going to have 125 RBI. He'll be, you know, if he remains hot, he could end up a 300, 400, 600 guy. I mean, he'll have close to 400 total bases. I feel like if the Marlins and he's a story in a way that Goldschmidt and Arenado or Blackman or DJ LeMahieu are not stories, really.
Right.
So I feel like if the Marlins somehow make it or even get close, he'll be there. But your other options, I think, are Goldschmidt, Charlie Blackman, Arenado, those guys.
And nobody's going to talk about Anthony Rendon. I mean, even though he's having a...
No, sorry.
MVP type.
Sorry, it's not going to happen, yeah. Well, I feel like he and Harper split the Nationals vote, and all the Rockies probably split the Rockies vote, which is why...
Yeah, that's true.
It's why the other reason Goldschmidt is probably your answer.
Really interesting that nobody from the Dodgers is likely to you know, I mean, unless Justin Turner... you know, sort of has a crazy September and because he's a little bit behind in the at-bats.
That's the thing. He missed 30 games at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
And so he's sort of like, he's not going to have the counting numbers that really impress people. And like Seager's doing his typical amazing
great,
thing,
right,
but
exactly.
he's great. Merely great. And like everybody on that team is like has an 870 OPS, like every single person on the team. So there's not one guy. They don't have Stanton or even Goldschmidt, really. They don't have the one guy who they have. Bellinger, he's the closest you come, but he's also cooled off a little in the second half. And I think a bunch of Dodgers split the Dodger vote and a bunch of Rockies split the Rocky vote. And I mean, I could be totally wrong. If Cody Bellinger hits 15 home runs in September, he'll win. Because I think the narrative would suggest people want to give the award to a Dodger because of how good the team is.
I just want to
see the craziest last wild card would be if Clayton Kershaw came back and like won his last five starts and ended up like 20-2 or something. I think it's possible that Kershaw would get it.
Right, which would be legit in its own way. I don't think that's going to happen necessarily. I do want to say this, though. Arizona leads the wild card race at the moment. So I think they're going to be in pretty decent shape. the Dodgers are 21 games ahead of them. I mean, that's,
isn't that crazy?
It's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane.
It's truly nuts. The two, in fact, both wild card teams are going to come from the Dodgers division, and neither one of them is within 20 games of the Dodgers.
Within 20 games in August.
In August, no, I believe their magic number, they lost tonight, obviously, but I believe their magic number is like 18, and it's August 23rd. Like, they are going to clinch a playoff berth. It's totally possible they clinch a playoff berth on Labor Day. I mean, it's really
it's
insane.
It's nuts. And by the way, that's how they lose. They only lose when their pitcher throws like no hitters for nine innings, but they can't score, yeah. Right? Like, that's the only way to beat them.
It's one last meaningless thing to end this meaningless thing. We talk about sports and we draft things we know, like how beaches are terrible places to go. No hot fruit for Michael, nor Diet Coke for Joe. The podcast, whoa, it's one last whoa, meaningless thing.
All right, time for one last meaningless thing to end this meaningless thing. And do you want to go first?
Well, I had my mind changed over the course of this day, because now my one last meaningless thing is that one of my favorite things about baseball is that when I saw that there was a no-hitter going into the 10th inning, you and I both had the same thought, which is Harvey Haddix.
Yes.
A player who was famous, who that, when was that game? That was in the 50s or 60s, 50, right?
52, I mean, maybe. I mean, a while ago.
It's a long time ago, but if I say the name Harvey Haddix, you know exactly the situation. If I said to you, hey, we have a Harvey Haddix situation, you would know exactly what that meant. And you would probably conjure up in your mind the same photo that I would conjure up in my mind, which is Harvey Haddix in the clubhouse holding up that ball,
yep,
that has the number 12 on it. Remember, you know that photo I'm talking about? Like, we all, like, people who love this game all share these incredibly obscure and weird photos and names. Like, Harvey Haddix, I don't know a single other thing about Harvey Haddix, but his name is instantly evocative of a very specific situation. I'm summoning my inner Tim Kirkchin here and saying that is one of the great things about this game, is that, like, that on August 23rd, Wednesday, August 23rd, 2017, somewhere out there is the spirit of Harvey Haddix, and he's smiling because his name is being invoked by thousands of people just like you and me, and that's
so
kind of
cool.
Great.
It's so cool. The game was May 26, 1959, 12 and two-thirds innings, one hit, one unearned run. It's pretty good. And one walk,
that's
which
wonderful.
All came in the 13th inning. I mean, it's...
That's right.
It's nuts. All right. My one last meaningless thing is, I don't know, this is a little controversial. I don't really... but I'm going to say it because it's been bothering me. So I think we all would agree that we live in a nation where, you know, every other day you'll see a poll that'll show 25% of America believes something kind of crazy, like kind of just out
there.
The world's flat or you know, that aliens are among us or whatever, some weird thing. So we know that 25% of America is at least out there. You know, they're out there, they're nutty, they're crazy, okay? We went in this week, of course, was famous for the eclipse. And we had the eclipse this week. And the one thing that basically, you know, the day of the eclipse was very, very cool with all the photos and videos. But leading up to the eclipse, the only thing that mattered was telling people don't look into the sun because you'll get blinded. Like, right, we heard that 75,000 times. 75,000 times. Get the glasses. Oh, those are not real glasses. And if you look in the sun for even like 1 second, you're going to die. I mean, it's like the worst possible thing.
Mm-hmm.
Why are like 50,000 people not blind right now? Where are the stories of all of the people who have been blinded by this eclipse? Because you know people were looking at the sun, right? I mean, it's not like there's no chance that 500,000 people in America were not like staring right at the sun. And shouldn't there be a follow-up on these people? I mean, isn't, like, we never hear, but like after 4th of July, after fireworks, you always hear about, yeah, this guy blew off his hand, and there was a fire set or whatever. I've heard nothing about the people who have been blinded by this thing.
There is an answer to your question. I would imagine that across the country and across anywhere that the eclipse on the eclipse path, I would guess that there are a couple hundred or thousand people who did damage to their eyes because they looked at the eclipse. I would imagine that there are. We just haven't heard of them.
I think this is, it's sort of like when the potential of a hurricane is coming and basically they basically say, oh, it's coming. It's coming. You need to get out of this town, whatever. I think that when it comes to this kind of thing, not just in America, I think all over the world, you need to completely overblow the danger. Because I don't think anybody right. was like, I don't think anybody went into it going, oh yeah, the variables or the, no, I think everybody was like, if you look at the sun, you will go blind.
I will also say, by the way, I believe this, we've now been talking for like an hour and a half.
It's insane. What,
what is the point? What is the point of what we're doing? Seriously, what is the point of doing a 90 minute long?
No.
You're right, because it'll only make this longer, but 90 minutes is too long for two people to talk about baseball and nothing.
I think
like we should talk about baseball for 45 minutes and then separately talk about nothing for 45 minutes, or we should only talk about nothing for 45 minutes probably because it's better than talking about baseball.
You're just saying we should divide this into two meaningless.
I don't know what we should do. I know that no one has the time in their life, even if you're playing this at 1.5 or 2 times speed, no one has the time to listen to a 90-minute podcast.
1.5 or 2 times speed? What are they listening to us?
Everyone, let me officially recommend everyone listen to this on double time because there's no, you can't, you don't have time. You don't have time in your life. I don't know how we have time to record this.
How do you even do that? How do you even do something in double time?
It's right there. No, on the podcast app on your phone, you just hit a button. It has 1.5x, 2x. You can go up to like 3 or 4x in some cases.
I just want to say that TJ, our producer, who is, God bless you, TJ. What in the world are you doing listening to this thing still?
He quit like hours ago.
No, he didn't because he just sent the message mentioning that that's a pretty useful suggestion at the 89-minute mark. which I think is fair. All right. Well, there you go. It's another podcast in the books is what it is.
I guess. I'm just saying now he sent us these messages. He also told us that Rhys Hoskins just hit his 7th homer in his 14th major league game.
Rhys. It is pronounced
yeah.
Rhys.
Aaron Judge. He's better than Judge. You heard it here first. Better than Aaron Judge.
As always, Michael, thank you.
Thanks for having me.